Hello and welcome to India Career Center, the one-stop podcast for students, professionals, parents and guardians. In every episode, we will try to deal with the current topic that needs expert advice related to career, career guidance and career management. Please welcome your host, Dr. S. Rishi, to the show. And happy listening.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode on India Career Center. Today, we are going to talk about the state of higher education in India. I would like to quote here some of the facts which are published in the All India Survey on Higher Education 2021. As per that report, in India, around 4.13 crore students enrolled into higher education in 2021, around 2.12 crore male and 2.01 crore female. The split of the enrollments were like this. So in arts, 33%. In science, around 16%. In commerce, around 14%. In engineering and technology, around 12%. So that was the broad split of enrollments in 2021. The number of students who passed out in the same year were approximately 95 lakh. So, which means that the ratio of input versus output is roughly about 1/4. The number of students who passed out were BA around 20 lakhs, Bachelor of Science about 11 lakhs, Bachelor of Commerce around 10 lakhs, engineering students around 8.3 lakh and diploma students around 8.5 lakh. And which clearly means that in India, if there are 95 lakh students who have passed out in the year 2021, so many jobs are required in the formal sector to be given to these students who pass out from the education system. But we know that most of the normal graduate students in different streams do end up doing something other than the formal jobs. So there is this gap of what the industry needs in terms of skills, in terms of the knowledge and know-how, and what is being offered in the formal education, especially the higher education in India. To address some of these skill gaps in the higher education, there are organizations like Maasai School who are trying to bridge that gap by providing the additional skilling programs for especially the undergraduate students who are not from a technical background. Of course, there are technical background people as well, but primarily the target is to help the non-technical students to acquire some skills and be ready for the job for the job market. To talk about this subject, I'd like to welcome Mr. Pratik Shukla, who is the founder, co-founder and CEO of Maasai School. Pratik, welcome to India Career Center. Thank you so much to be part of our show today. And it's quite amazing of knowing about your organization, your institution, of what it is doing in the Indian skilling space. And I'm looking forward to a great conversation with you. Thank you so much to be with us.
Thank you so much, Dr. Mishra, for inviting me. And I hope the conversation is going to be enriching for many people, those who are going to listen to it.
Okay, to start our conversation, Pratik, please take us through your personal journey. You belong to UP and grown up in Rajasthan, and you studied in IIT Kanpur and so on and so forth. So take us through your interesting journey first.
So, yeah, as you said, my ancestors are from UP. And then my grandfather was in CBI. He finally, his last stint was in Rajasthan, and that's when he decided to basically stayed. And that's how I was born in Ajmer, brought up in Bhilwara, which is a textile city of, like, people call it Manchester of India as well. And basically, was like brought up in Bhilwara, where I was the so Bhilwara, majority of the folks actually work in business. Okay, so I still remember that in every class, whenever the teacher used to ask that whose father is in job and whose father is doing business, I was the only one who used to raise hand, and that is something which was a constant for me. I never thought that I'll end up starting a business, and probably like I'm the only one in my entire family who is into business. Rest everyone is actually doing job. So it's quite a very interesting journey. Till 10th, I was like a typical student who used to basically top the exams, actually till 12th. So in 11th, 12th, anyone in Rajasthan who aspired, who is good in education and who is into science, were asked to basically go to Kota. During that time, I also applied in various coaching centers in Kota, but I got into one of the best coaching center at that point of time. But at that point of time, our financial condition was not that great. So my father told me that basically study from here only. And if you can, like if you are so good, you can crack IIT from here only. The state of education in the city where I was in, like I was in probably one of the best school in Bhilwara. But I can tell you from one anecdote itself, then you can understand the state of education that we had. Our English teacher used to teach us in Hindi. Okay, and that is where that is the quality of education that you can expect. So what I used to do is basically we formed a group of 4 or 5 people, and then we started studying for IIT, doing preparation all by ourselves. There were few tuitions that we actually opted in, but majorly it was all by ourselves. Somehow cracked IIT in the first go itself, without any coaching. And that gave me confidence that I can crack it, although the rank was not that great. So at that point of time, I thought that probably I'll go to IIT or through AIEEE. At that point of time, AIEEE used to happen, go to a nice college. But at that point of time, because of my rank in IIT, I got 100% scholarship in Kota. So then I insisted my dad that, can I basically take a year off and basically study once more in a coaching, in a structured manner. And that's when Kota happened. Studied there and got into IIT. And then this time it was IIT Kanpur. The first one was IIT Roorkee and second one was IIT Kanpur. So got into IIT Kanpur. And then as soon as I went to IIT Kanpur and... It was an eye opener for most of the people, because most of the people, those who come from tier 2, tier 3, tier 4 cities, have not seen anything beyond books. You were topper throughout. You were you cracked IIT twice. But then over there, everyone was the topper. Everyone was the state topper. Some of them are national toppers. And that's when I realized that only education is not something which you should be doing. You need to basically have some extra currics. So that's when I decided that I have studied a lot in my entire life. And that is the only thing which I have done. So now what I'll do is basically I'll explore new things. Okay. And that's where the exploration began. By the end of it, you would see my resume, which consists of positions of responsibilities where anything which, be it elections, so I won many elections, be it managing the fest that we have, part of core team member over there, managing a team of 300 people while you are in third year, fourth year, that is all I have done. The fest sizes that we had is basically we used to get marketing budgets of or we used to basically get those many sponsors where the fest total sponsorship money is roughly around 1.5 to 2 crores. So you can imagine the scale at which it operates, and you are managing that. So I've done all those things. So I had a great position of responsibility, whatever anyone can imagine in IIT Kanpur. That is something which I did. And as a result, I think majorly the like in my previous startup or in this startup, you'll see that many people are there from IIT Kanpur. Most of them are my juniors or my batchmates. Those who have worked with me in those fests or work with me during that time, and they've seen me working. And that's how you build a very, very strong bond. So it was a very, very, like, it was a very different kind of an experience, but amazing ride in IIT Kanpur. And then there was placement time. So then you have to basically go to a company. But at that point of time, what happened was it is also a very interesting start, like interesting thing which has happened during that time. So so as I was saying, that I was literally the leader, the best leader of my batch, probably, who is participating or who is managing everything. So I had a great resume. And because of that, I actually became slightly overconfident during my placement season. So I became so overconfident, slightly is a small word, I think it's so I became so overconfident that I shortlisted three companies. I told them that company is not going to shortlist me. I am going to basically select three companies and I'm going to basically go to any one of them. So I selected McKinsey, BCG and Deutsche Bank. So these are the three companies and I'll just appear in their interviews and the rest I have not applied. So the way placement works in IIT Kanpur is that you need to basically apply for companies beforehand. And you can't just barge into the interviews directly. So you need to basically apply it beforehand. So I did it for only these three companies. Incidentally, the first two companies, McKinsey, BCG, didn't came. So they were they opted out from placement during my time, and then there was only one which was remaining, which was Deutsche Bank, and I was rejected in the first round itself. And now you imagine that I was so overconfident that I have not applied to any other company, and this is the company where I rejected in the first round, and I was sitting idle for the first 7 days. And in the first 7 days, 60-70% of the batch usually get placed. Okay. And then I was sitting over there, everyone in my wing. So this is a wing system. So you have like 20, 25 people who are living together. They are in part of one wing. One floor is known as one wing. So in my wing, almost everyone got placed. And I was the only one who was not placed. So yeah, like that was something which was an eye opener for me. And that's when I basically... took a break, went to McLeod for around 10-15 days and thought a lot about what has gone wrong, and then came back. And at that point of time, started basically thinking about what should be next for me. So what I did was that I knew right from the starting that I never follow herd mentality. So this is also going to be how I want to shape my career. And what I did was basically I shortlisted four different industries. And I thought that I'll basically apply to any one of them. I'll go and do an internship in all four of them actually. And then see that where I want to build my career. The first industry was microfinance. So I was reading this book called Banker to the Poor, and I was fascinated by the work that Mohammed Yunus sir is doing in Bangladesh. So I applied over there. What happened was, basically, as soon as I applied, I read the book and I applied. So I got a mail back that we usually don't hire engineers as interns, but since you have read a lot about us, would love to give it a try. And that's how I got our internship under Mohammed Yunus in Bangladesh. So was so excited at that point of time. I told my mom that I was not placed, but I got an internship, that too in Bangladesh. My mom was literally shocked here what has happened to my kid, because people from IIT usually go to US, UK and other places, but this guy is going to Bangladesh. So that was something which was which was quite interesting. But then she refused And she never let me go over there. So my second one was startup. And incidentally, some of my friends in college have started startup, and they hired me as their co-founder. So while I was in my fourth year, I was actually working in a startup where I was a co-founder. We raised some capital while we were studying itself, and that's when I started loving the entire startup piece, because before that I was not aware of startup, and in IIT Kanpur usually startup culture is not that great at that point of time when I was there. Now it's quite amazing. But at that point of time, we were the very few people, those who were exploring startup as the way forward. And when I was part of the startup, I loved the entire rigor, loved the problem solving piece. And then I thought that this is probably what I want to do for the rest of my life. And that's how, when I graduated, I started my first venture, which was GrabHouse. And that's how the journey began.
Picking up a few of the very interesting thoughts on the way. So you actually have seen a kind of a roller coaster ride during your IIT Kanpur days.
Yes.
Starting with a shocking of environment to learn about how things happen, to doing the best possible leadership roles in various things. And then getting the shock of life in terms of not getting through the campus. So quite amazing and roller coaster ride. And in a way, I think it prepared you for the future as well.
Yeah. Definitely. I think if I would not have gone through that kind of a ride, I would have a very mediocre career and probably have not learned anything from my failures. I think the early shock that you can get, all the early shocks I got while I was in the age range of 17 to 21 itself. And that actually shaped whatever I am today.
Fantastic. And then you went on to be part of this organization, which is like a startup. So tell us about that, because that's also interesting for that point of time, and which was eventually taken over by one of the bigger organizations. So tell us about that.
Yeah, so basically, as I was saying that in college, my friends have started a startup where I was part of, I was part as a co-founder. And then once I graduated, I thought that let me start something of my own. And that's where GrabHouse happened. GrabHouse was basically, at that point of time, it was 2013, India's first broker-free platform to connect owner with potential renters. So we were before No Broker came into existence. The problem pain point was very simple, that the pain point was very evident as well for most of the people, those who migrate to a new city or a bigger city, specifically a tier one cities or metros, where broker role in renting is usually just opening the door of the house, nothing more than that, because in the end you need to see the house, you need to negotiate with the owner, and you need to do everything. So broker role was very less, but at the same point of time, you have to share 1 month of rent with the broker, and that is something which I was not very comfortable with, and that is something which was a pain point that we identified in many people, and that's when we thought that this is the problem we're solving. So I started it. Then we basically ran it for almost three and a half years. And then it was eventually acquired by Quikr. So we raised capital along the way from some of the best investors in India, like Sequoia Capital, then India Quotient and other folks. India Quotient is also an investor in Masai as well. So it was also quite a roller coaster ride. So we were the first one. Then we realized that this problem needs more time to solve. So then we pivoted to something called as fully furnished managed house rental business, where we used to take a house and we used to basically furnish it and give it to bachelors or sublet it to bachelors. That is something which we were doing as well, along with the classified business. So yeah, quite an interesting ride. And then got acquired by Quikr.
Fantastic. I think the product was probably slightly ahead of its time, and it took some time before it matured.
No, that's not the case. The we started, and then 6 months down, like after us, NoBroker started. The challenge with that market is that it takes time because let's say if you have a house on rent and you give it out to let's say brokers as well as some platform. Usually the houses are in like the city is divided into four kind of zones. Majorly there are zones where even if your tenant is, as soon as your tenant says that I'm moving out, you find a new tenant immediately. So there are hot zones where there are enough number of people, those who are looking to basically take the house. Then there are different kinds of zones. So usually what happens is that in hot zones, people don't need to basically work with anyone. They just post it that they have a house available and they get the tenant. And the lease period is usually 11 months. On an average, it is roughly around 1.5 to 2 years in Bangalore, where a person stays in one house. So even if you got a house in the first go and you were able to find out the tenant, it's only after 1.5 or 2 years that the house is also again going to be available on your platform. And you need to do the matchmaking again and find the right tenant. And if you'll do it repeatedly for 2 or 3 times, then only the owner will get that kind of a trust in your platform that they don't need to rely on brokers. So usually it takes 4 to 5 years to basically build that relationship with the owner. And it takes time because as soon as you find a tenant, after that, there is no involvement with the owner or tenant throughout the journey. So okay. That's why it's a slow, it's not like it's a slow growth business. But once you have the owner trust, and that's when it is going to be an amazing business altogether. So, yeah, it takes time.
Yeah. Excellent. I think moving on, tell us about your Africa visit.
Yeah, so then as I was saying that when we got acquired by Quikr, I was working there for like, I worked there for around 8 to 10 months. And then after that, got a very, very interesting opportunity to work in Chennai. So I never, like I was in real estate, but it was majorly online real estate. So it's more of a tech and product play. But I got an opportunity to work on a real township, which was created in the center of the city in Chennai, and it was India's second largest township. So I was responsible for managing it. So I worked there for like 2 years. And after that, I realized that my role over there is majorly to maximize the revenue per square feet, which in the age of 28, 29, you think that it's not what I want to do right now. So that's when I thought that probably I need to go back to the startup world once again. Before that, I thought that let me take a break. And I went to Tanzania. So I went there for almost like 7 to 10 days. But I loved the entire experience. I interacted with Masai Mara tribe. Let me tell you more about Masai Mara tribe first. So Masai Mara is one of the strongest tribe of Africa. Okay. They have very, very strong cultural beliefs. But at the same point of time, the entire tribe believes that formal education is of no use. Okay. So they don't believe in formal education at all. What they do is basically they have their own Masai Mara run schools, which specializes in one particular skill set. So let's say if you want to basically be involved in farming, agriculture, and other things, so there's a school meant for that. And children right from the early age are enrolled in those schools where they develop skills to basically work in one particular area. And that is how they are shaped. Their career is shaped. And that is how they basically build their tribe. And they have the best are the best cultivators, they're the best farmers, they have the best guides, best people in construction, and that is all created through Masai Mara run schools. So I was fascinated that a tribe which is considered to be the strongest tribe of Africa, but they have not done any formal education, and at the same point of time they speak really well, they are knowledgeable, and they believe that skills is better than any formal education, and that is what their focus is. So it's quite fascinating and quite innovative thinking, which is so rare to, and you can't expect that you'll find it in Africa, that too in a tribal area. But that was something which was very, very, very exciting. So what happened was, during my IIT days, I did one internship in Teach for India. Okay. Over there also, what I saw was the impact. Okay, so Teach for India is an organization where they basically take fellows every year and they work in low-income municipality schools, and they teach students. So at that time, they used to basically take people, students of first or second grade, and they used to basically make them better than the usual first or second grade students, because there are people, those who are coming from like the prestigious institutes of our country, and they are responsible to basically train students over there. So I still remember the day when, which was my first day in Teach for India, I was an intern and I entered into an auditorium where there was a girl who was in her first grade, and she was part of the school where Teach for India fellows were there. So this girl was speaking English 1,000 times better than me, and not just me, but all my friends combined together can't speak well, like what she is saying on stage in front of 1,000 people. She was expressing herself beautifully, and she was a moderator in one play, which she only directed. And that was amazing. Like a first grade student from a low income municipality school, and all the other kids over there are 1,000 times better than the students that I even see in 9th or 10th standard in from an international school, and very expressive. So I realized then and there itself that there is a huge potential in our country, a huge untapped potential in our country. It just needs to be unlocked. And the way it is going to happen is by bringing in right kind of people, who believes that India has an untapped potential and who believes that it can be unlocked. So right kind of people are required for that. And combining that thought process with Masai Mara, what I've seen, I thought that there is a need to basically work in the higher education space, because in higher education space, like just like how the facts that you have mentioned, I'll go slightly more detail in that. There were a couple of reports at that point of time which were floating around that 95% of our program or computer science students don't know how to write a single line of code. So that was something which was very alarming, because at one end, where companies are basically struggling to find out people, at the other end, we have college educations which are running in a similar way for last many, many decades, have not innovated at all. And at the same point of time, we are just churning out graduates every year, those who have degree and credible score, but they don't have any skills which are needed in the industry. So there was a huge skill gap that I could identify, and that's when I thought that this is the problem we're solving. So that's when Masai happened.
Okay, excellent. Taking forward our conversation, let's talk about your Masai school setting it up. How was it? When it started, and who all came together to start this? Take us through that.
Yeah. So basically, like as soon as I came back from Tanzania, I thought that this is what I want to do. So I first reached out to Nupal, who is my co-founder and CTO of Masai. He is my senior from IIT Kanpur. Okay, so Nupul is that kind of a person. When I was running Grab House as well, or anyone from my batch who was running any startup, Nupul was that common thread in every startup, because anyone who faced technical difficulty and not able to resolve it through their existing team used to reach out to Nupul, and Nupul is one man army, and he used to basically solve it. Incidentally, he was also working in the education space. He was majorly focusing on K-12 space at that point of time. So I thought, let's change the face of higher education in our country. Let's work together on this. So that's how Nupul came along. My wife actually was working with Swiggy earlier. So she was trained. She was at a mid-management, slightly on a senior management side. There was this guy called Yogesh, who used to basically enhance the sales performance training, used to provide sales performance training, enhance the sales performance of the mid to senior level folks. Okay. And she has actually seen the impact that Yogesh can create. Okay. So I knew right from the starting itself that when we are going to build any school which is going to disrupt the higher education, the most fundamental piece is going to be communication skills and behavioral training, because the technical part is still something which can be manageable. But if you want to make someone holistically developed, communication is going to play a very, very important role. So I wanted someone who basically can work with students, not just on basic communication skills, but enhancing the overall personality of a person. Okay, so that's when I got connected to Yogesh, and he's my third co-founder. And we all three came along, and we started Masai in June 2019. So it's literally like almost 4 years now. 4 years back, we started Masai. Yeah.
And I did came across this wonderful concept of pay after placement.
Yeah,
I'm sure there are quite a few videos as well. But if you can explain this to our viewers and listeners.
Yeah. So when we were thinking about what we need to do in Masai, okay, so we form a team, but what is the area that we want to focus on? So Nupul, being a techie, I am majorly a tech and product guy in the past as well. So we knew that right from the starting that tech is our core forte, and we are going to basically make programmers. And also we believe in one very important thing, that 10 years, the next 10 years belongs to tech and tech industry alone. You are seeing whatever is happening around us, generative AI and everything coming in. So it's a golden era to be in tech. So we knew, and we were very bullish about this space. So we knew that this is what Masai is going to be focusing on. But we don't want to become the next education institutes. Like for example, when I was telling you that the institutes have not changed in decades, the best institute where I have studied, they also change their curriculum once in 10 years. Okay. And that is something which is so shocking, because the industry around us is changing at a rapid speed. It is changing. Like, we talk about AI, ML, data science and other things. Most of the work happens on TensorFlow, which was created in 2015, 2016. Now imagine the industry is being set up which work on the technologies which are created in 2015, 2016. And at the same point of time, we are saying that we are changing the curriculum in once in 10 years. That's something which was bad. So we knew right from the starting that we need to basically have a very strong industry collaboration. But at the same point of time, we are still not going to disrupt the higher education until unless we basically create a situation which is a win-win for students, for institutes, and for college, for corporates. If we'll not create that, it is not going to be something which is going to disrupt anything. So we started with a model that we are not going to charge any upfront fees to our students. There is zero fees to enter into Masai School. There is an admission test. You give the admission test and you're part of Masai School. And once you basically complete the entire course, which takes 8-8.5 months. And once you graduate and get a job of 5 lakhs per annum or above, then only you pay us fees. If you don't get a job of 5 lakhs per annum, or let's say if you get a job of 4.9 lakhs per annum as well, you don't have to pay us a single penny. So it creates a, it is like basically saying that I am going to work harder than my students to basically ensure that students' outcome or student success is the first key metric which is going to be achieved. Once that is going to be done, then on, and once that is going to be done, it is going to be a win for the industry as well. And then eventually it is a win for the institute as well. If any education institutes promise you that they'll give you a job, and if they fail to do so, they should not get paid, correct? And that is something which I truly believe in. And before starting Masai, I actually spoke to a lot of colleges. I told them that there are engineers that you're churning out like crazy, and they are not finding engineering jobs. So why are you getting paid in advance for the education, and why you don't focus on this kind of a model? And everyone said that education industry is a recession-proof industry. Okay, and it is because we take money upfront. We don't care about what is going to happen. And that is something which is so bad. So we knew that right from the starting, and specifically the kind of students that comes to Masai School. It like because of this, removing this financial barrier, you unlock the potential. As I was telling you, that unlock the untapped potential is something which needs to be done. And tier 2, tier 3, tier 4 cities or villages of a country where people can't afford to basically pay any money to get quality education. For them, this is like a place where you can study, you can get quality education, you can basically get a job. And 5 lakhs per annum is that kind of a job which puts you in top 2.5% population in our country. So it's aspirational as well. Because of that, and the entire model is facilitated through pay after placement. So basically, once you get a job, then you basically have to pay the fees from your monthly salary. If you don't get a 5LPA job, you don't have to pay us anything. So that's pay after placement. And that model actually widened the pool and unlocked this for people, those who can't afford quality education, create a level playing field for everyone. And at the same point of time, keep the institute on toes all the time to ensure that you are going to only obsess about students' outcome, nothing else. And that is what the DNA of Masai School is.
What is very interesting is that there's a lot of trust which you put on to your students.
Yeah.
Because you're trusting them while taking them in.
Yeah.
In terms of they getting into a good organization, and after that paying you back. So
yeah.
I think it's a huge amount of trust which you have placed on the students to start with. And of course, their extended family, their parents and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
So that is something which is actually quite unique, and I don't think any other organization or institution in India actually is doing that.
Yeah.
So how actually that, I mean, I do understand that it is important. I mean, you mentioned it, that focusing on placement, focusing on real job placement is important. But for an institution to invest money first, on the education of the student, and then getting the money over a period of time through EMIs or whatever, is something which is unusual, and possibly this is one of the best disruptions which you could do on the education system.
Yeah. So what we believe, like, this is one question which was there right from the starting, that there's a huge trust deficit which exists between the people, those who are there, and on our justice system, on our legal system, on our the entire law and machinery. Because of that trust deficit, I think people tend to basically believe that in India, most of the people are corrupt. But what we thought in the starting is that there might be 5% people, those who might be like this. Okay. But why are you punishing 95% of the people for those who are trustworthy? Okay. You can't create policies to keep in mind for 5%, which is going to punish 95%. And that's how most of the things are created in our country. But we were against that. And we knew that if we are not going to put our trust on them, okay, and eventually someone wants to basically take all the knowledge, okay, and get into job all by himself or herself and don't want to pay. It's better, like, it is also fault of an education institute that they, like, if someone is spending 11 hours or 12 hours a day with you and they are there for 8.5 or 9 months, and if you're not able to basically build in that kind of a relationship with a person, that the person don't feel that you have actually added any value in their life, then this is also a fault of education institutes, correct? So I slightly go with a purist approach on these fronts or on these topics, because I believe that there is still a lot of good in this society. There's still a lot of folks. And that's why, like, if you'll see in Masai case, till now, we work with NBFCs, by the way. So to facilitate pay after placement agreement, we work with NBFCs. So people, those who pay, we have hardly seen anyone defaulting on their EMIs. Okay. And that is because we have put that trust on them. And that's it's a two-way thing, correct? So if we are trusting them, they are going to basically trust us as well. And accordingly, we'll be able to basically change the complete narrative. So yes, it is a very challenging problem, but you need to basically go with the thought that India is still good society. Like, people are still good. People have the right, like, the heart is in the right place. And they are not going to basically be corrupted, or they are not going to basically cheat the system until unless you give them an opportunity to do that. If you put that trust on them, they are going to basically reciprocate it back. And that's when you create a wonderful society. So that's the thought process that we all had.
Fantastic. No, it's a very purist thought, and I'm sure a lot can be done with, as you mentioned rightly, keeping the majority in mind rather than worrying about the small minority, which probably is not in the right place. Majority, I think people are good. We just have to harness the strength out of it.
Correct.
So moving on, let's talk about your association or the tie-up with the NSDC. How it is helping you, and how is it? What is the tie-up and how it is helping?
Yeah, so NSDC reached out, basically their core focus is on skill development, correct? And they wanted to basically partner with as many companies as possible, those who contribute towards skill development. In Masai case, we were the first one of the first companies which partnered with NSDC majorly. Because they were fascinated by what we are doing. Okay, so they have been part of skill development for quite some time, but they have not seen this kind of a model. They have not seen how, and they also focus on impact. So I'll tell you more about the impact that we are creating first, and that's when NSDC is something which will listeners would be able to understand that why that collaboration happened. So as I was saying, that most of the, like, 80% of our students come from tier 2, tier 3, tier 4 cities and villages. 70% of our students are from economic weaker section. Okay. So far, Masai School have graduated over 3,000 students, graduated and placed over 3,000 students with an average package of 7.2 LPA. And out of that, Masai has been able to uplift, like, close to 200 families out of poverty line. So 200 job creation, which has happened. Because of that, I'll tell you the story of some of our students. Like, for example, there's a kid who will belong to a village in Telangana. Her entire family income was 5,000 rupees per month. Okay. Mom used to work as a daily wage laborer, and dad was not working. And this girl was the first person from her village who is who now gets into a job through Masai, and she is earning close to, her package is right now 18 LP.
Wow.
You imagine someone who has seen 5,000 per
I'm
month.
I'm getting goosebumps.
Yeah, and this is like not just one story. I'll tell you hundreds of stories like this where someone life, someone, and this is the beauty about this model, that if you change or if you transform someone's life, you are not just helping that person, but you are changing the entire family. You are changing all the people around them. And that is eventually contributing towards society. Now, from that same village, there are 17 other girls and guys who are studying in Masai school because of seeing that girl's transformation. Okay, she has shifted her entire family to Bangalore. Her mother has stopped working now. Her father stays at home, and then she works, and she basically and she gives them all those kind of things which were lacking in their household. Like, she was so happy when she bought her first TV from her salary. Like, this is the first time they had TV in their house. And there are many, many, many more than that. Many more stories like that. So NSDC saw this impact. Okay. And this is why NSDC was formed in the first place. They want to basically focus on skill development. They want to focus on creating an impact. So the combination of both the things, they saw it in Masai. And that's when they decided that they want to partner with us. So what we get is basically we work closely with NSDC on not just skill development piece, but at the same point of time, we work very closely with them to improve the IT, ITES, KPIs for all the other skilling institute as well, so that we are all on the same page. The quality level which is needed in the IT industry is something which we are drafting with them very closely. They have they are also working with us unlocking Masai's potential in terms of reaching out to various corporates and other places. So they work very closely with us. In return, what our students get is, once they graduate, they get a certificate of completion of the course, which is jointly signed by Masai and NSDC. So it is accredited by Government of India in a way. And that is something which is quite beneficial for someone who basically might not have done the formal education in the past, but now getting that certificate, which is recognized across the industry. So that is the collaboration that happens with NSDC. And not just with NSDC, I think Tamil Nadu Skill Development Center also signed a MOU with Masai School to basically work with colleges, those who have very poor placement rates. Same is the case in Karnataka, this Karnataka Digital Economy Mission, those who have signed a collaboration document with Masai to uplift 1,000 women, or to basically make sure that we are skilling 1,000 women in tech in next 1 year. And they are going to basically create placement opportunities for them. So we are going to basically be taking students from villages, and we are going to train them to become software developer, and they are going to be part of Karnataka Digital Economy Mission. So, the governments are quite open about it, and they are working very closely with us. I think that's in a nutshell what the entire collaboration is all about.
Excellent. So I think moving on, so how do you see the next 5 to 7 years? You did mention that this is the golden period for tech industry.
Yeah.
But how do you see Masai in the next 5 to 7 years?
So we have a very... we have two milestones that we intend to basically achieve. Currently, we have 9,000 students studying in Masai School across different learning tracks. Now, from someone who needs to basically visualize it, that how big it is equivalent to the first years of all the IITs put together. Wow. So 9,000 students, which is putting all the IITs student of first year together. That's how big Masai School is right now. Our first milestone that we intend to achieve is that we want to graduate and place 25,000 students every year, which we want to do in next 2 years. And that is something which is going to basically make Masai bigger than all the IITs and NITs put together in terms of the number of students, those who are graduating and getting placed. Next 5-year goal that we have is that we want to graduate and place thousands, 1 lakh students every year. Not just that, I think another impact focus goal that we have is that when we are graduating and placing 1 lakh students every year, we want to, by that time, we want to uplift 10,000 families out of poverty line. So that's one fundamental goal that we have, that 10,000 families should be out of poverty line. And every year, Masai should be graduating and placing 1 lakh students, which will make us the largest education institute, not just in India, but across the globe. So that's the milestone that we are working towards.
Fantastic. Just to give a context of what you're speaking, and I think it's, I keep talking about this quite often in my other podcast as well. So India is amongst the few countries in the world where we have got demographic dividend. And most of the rest of the developed nations, almost across African nation as well as some of the Asian nation, rest of the nations are all becoming older and they are also becoming less in population. Which means that a lot of young Indians, a lot of young Asians, a lot of young Africans will actually move across the world and provide all the services which are required across the world for the people who are getting older.
Yeah.
So while you are doing what you're doing for the Indian job market, I think this is one area which probably your Masai school also play an important role going forward. Not just making the young Indian ready for India, but also probably for the global stage. This is something which I thought. So what do you think about it?
As you rightly said, I think preparing, and I think after this pandemic, another very important thing which has happened is that like now specifically in the tech ecosystem, you are from India, you are from a tier 3 city, but you can still work in not just Indian companies, but also across the globe. Basically working, and there are many students in Masai, those who have graduated, those who are alums, they are living in cities like Kanpur, they are living in cities like Agra and all, and they are working in the US-based companies from India itself, and in tech, remote working is still something which is quite popular. Rest of the places don't have that sort of a tracking mechanism, but in tech, people do contribute. So I think it is basically what we believe is that Indians, like if you basically keep on skilling Indians, and they are not just going to be ready for Indian jobs, but they are going to be taking over the global jobs as well from sitting from India and capturing them.
Yeah. So moving on, your institution is currently focusing only on software and data analytics, which are the broad two subjects.
Yeah.
But the skill gaps which are available in India is quite large in a lot of areas.
Correct.
And what is your intention? Are you at some point of time thinking also to parallelly or laterally look at other skill areas where you can actually create that impact? Now that you have created, I mean, the platform is there, the knowledge is there, the scalability part is what is required. And of course, you need the domain experts in those particular areas to join with you. So what is your thought on that?
Yeah, so one thing which I said, Dr. Mishra, that we are always going to be focusing around tech or tech peripheral like jobs which are available in that tech periphery. And that is something which is always going to be the case. So if there are gaps, skill gaps which exist, but there are many schools like Masai are going to basically emerge to solve that one particular specific skill gap. But Masai is going to be I started with software development. Now we are into data analytics. Very soon you'll see that we are going to be in product management. We are going to be in UI, UX. But again, everything is basically around tech or tech-related domains. If it comes to the MBA side of things, that is where we are not going to focus on, at least for next foreseeable future that I am looking at. But I think it is going to be, because we are very bullish on tech, and we believe that tech and tech related jobs are going to be the most in demand jobs in the world, not just in India, in this decade. So we are going to basically be servicing around that. But yes, there are going to be different courses in tech related domains that are going to come up at Muscle.
Okay. Great. I think, Pratik, it was fantastic talking to you on your journey, your personal journey, and the Masai School. And it's really heartwarming to know what impact you are already created in last 4 years, and your plans for the future. They really sound fantastic. So I really sincerely want to thank you for spending time with us, explaining about all the facets of Masai School, and young listeners and viewers and or their parents, whoever is watching this or listening to this, they can you can explore the links which are provided on this show link, and apply for the relevant kind of courses in Masai School.
Thank you so much, Dr. Mishra, for having me, and it was an amazing conversation. And you guys are doing great job with India Career Center as well. So thank you so much for having me, and would love to basically see how we can work with India Career Center to basically solve the problems even at K-12 level. Look forward to basically having more and more discussions like this going forward as well.
Fantastic. Thank you so much.
Hope you enjoyed this episode. We sincerely wish you could take something from our conversation today and be able to apply it to your life in a positive way. We value your feedback. This can help us improve our future episodes. So share your thoughts to serve you better. If you want us to focus on a topic which you think is of importance, let us know. We will share our expertise in future episodes. See you soon with a new topic and help you in your career journey.